Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit michters.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to a special episode of In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and we are back for today from a short hiatus. In the meantime, while we've been gone, I've gone ahead and opened up Fausto, a restaurant that is brand new to Park Slope, Brooklyn. And at Fausto, we pair fresh pastas and wood-fired proteins with a mostly Italian wine list and a great list of aperitivi and digestivi, a bunch of great amaros. And that is why I am so excited to have our guest here today in studio with us for this special show. We have in studio Brad Thomas Parsons. He is a writer. He has authored a couple of books, including Bitters, which is a winner of the James Beard Award and the IACP Cookbook Awards, Amaro, which I believe deserves to win all of those awards and more. I really love Amaro. And also Distillery Cats, which I haven't read, but Caitlin Harrison, who's the service director at Fausto, really loves this book and tells me about how great it is. So I've only heard good things. So I'm really excited to have Brad in the studio with us today. Welcome to In the Drink.
Thanks, Joe. It's great. It's really exciting to be here. I'm glad you broke your hiatus for me.
It's our first show of 2018. I'm still really busy with Fausto. It's been going really well.
Congratulations on that. I had a chance to come to a preview of it, but I haven't been in for a proper dinner or drink yet. But I'm going to remedy that soon.
I'd love to have you. You're a Brooklyn. You live in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. I'm so in Carroll Gardens.
Okay, not too far.
No, and it's a beautiful space, and the food I tasted and the drinks look great, and I'm excited to spend some time there.
Thank you so much. It's great to hear you say that. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's been going well. Like I said, the wine list is about half Italian, and then we have California, French wines. I'm trying to make sure that the wine list is a really good value, and it's every one of those bottles on the list are things that I would personally spend my own money and gladly drink. And so it's a really personal wine list to me. A beautiful design from Home Studios, Greenpoint-based design. And I've been really surprised to see, and pleasantly surprised to see, how much Amaro people are drinking. And I really want to talk about Amaro with you, especially because we've been focusing on getting some of these really cool old Amari from Alex at Soul Agent and a couple other sources I know you're friends with.
Yeah, I saw you've been posting when new ones joined the list, and I was curious how are people asking for those, or are you kind of more bringing those around now to introduce people to them, or how are people receiving the vintage Amari at Fausto?
It's been really cool. I think that it shows you the power of social media. People see them on Instagram and they come in, they're like, we want some of that vintage Amaro, because on our list we write vintage Amaro available on request.
I like that.
And I'm doing 1 ounce pours for $15. So I think it's an acceptable entry point.
That's, no matter
what it is.
That's a great.
Don't think I'm never going to go, you know, rich or broke, you know, selling vintage Amaro. It's like that's not going to be that significant a portion of what we do. So I want people who are interested to try it to be able to do it, and for it to not be that big of a hit.
No, that's amazing. That's probably, I mean, the Four Horsemen in Williamsburg, they brought in some recently, and they had pretty fair prices. But I think I know in Chicago once, I bought two vintage Ramazzotti shots or pours, and it was around $150 or something. Oh. And so it was almost more than the dinner. So it's sort of so I've seen some exaggerated anywhere. I think anywhere from, you know, 15 to 50, depending what you're drinking. 50 is pretty much. But but you mentioned Alex Bachman of Soul Agent. So Alex opened and was an original partner and still is of Billy Sunday, a bar in Chicago, which has one of the biggest Amari selections in the country. And through his years of research and connections in Italy, he's been brokeraging and bringing in a lot of bottles. So now he has this company, Soul Agent, which is just over a year old now, I think, or a little more. And working with people like yourselves and getting vintage spirits, a lot of Amari, but other spirits as well, to bars and restaurants across the country. And he's going to open a retail shop soon in Chicago.
That's very
cool.
Which
should be fun. But yeah, he's a wealth of knowledge on the topic and a good friend of mine. So I'm excited to see his influence traveling across the country.
That's really cool. And he's been a great resource, and there are some others as well. But I want to talk a little bit about how things have sort of have changed. You know, when I opened Del Anima in 2007, I made it a point to buy every Amaro that was available on the market.
Which was like
always.
Four of them.
Which
right?
was like four. Yeah. And then eventually maybe got to six or eight. Mm-hmm. And that felt like it was just a huge yeah. amount. And people weren't interested. I felt like the only way to get people to drink them was to give them away to, you know, to guests who yes. are regulars or friends or industry or something. And now things have changed greatly. People yeah. come into the restaurant and ask for Amaro, people who aren't in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. I would think a big part of it is your great book.
Thank you.
I think that's really brought a lot of notice to it. But what got you interested in Amaro to begin with, and how have you seen things change over the years?
Yeah, well, to answer the second part first,
okay.
I've talked about this before and a little bit, but trends, you know, I hate to say like bitters and Amaro are trends because they're essential historical parts of drinking culture, but they really do start with bartenders. They're the front line of protecting the spirits, helping people know about them, educating people, influencing people. And then that trickles down to the media and influencers, and then eventually the general public. And that can be anywhere from a year to several years. And with my first book, Bitters, the book came out right when that was happening, where suddenly it wasn't just Angostura and Peychaud's. There were newer bitters available, and people were using them, and customers were seeing them at the bars and picking them up and using them. And Amaro came out 2016 in the fall, and at that point, same thing you had mentioned earlier was happening, where more bottles were becoming available, newer imports. But it really started with those bartenders drinking Fernet Branca shots, which became known as the bartender's handshake. It was a way of hospitality, welcoming fellow travelers to and from bars. If you ordered that, people knew you were in the industry. And I think on the cocktail, the biggest thing I've seen with Amaro, when I was researching the book in Italy, a lot of the producers and bartenders were like, why are you doing this? You know, this is our grandparents' drink. No one really, it's not that exciting. But in the States, especially, bartenders were leading the charge using Amaro beyond a digestivo in cocktails. So while the Negroni is a historical cocktail, the States, we were a little late to adopting that as one of the best drinks ever. And it's sort of a way, you know, it's cosmopolitan, represents a little of dolce vita. And it's a drink that's truly bitter. So you get a lot of times, when you first thing you say Amaro, what is it? Oh, it's a bittersweet. Oh, I don't like bitter. So you have people don't like bitter.
And it used to be a dirty word, bitter. Yeah. I don't think it is as much now anymore.
But right? I still think, I totally agree with you, but I found in my travels a lot of times because we're in the industry or we write about it, we cover it, we're sort of the one percenters where there's a lot of people out there. Like if we lined up random people, even here outside the studio at Roberta's, maybe it's a little skewed here because we're in Brooklyn, but you know, 7 out of 10 people might not know what Amaro is. And I've shadowed, there's a domestic Amaro maker in DC, Francesco Amodeo from Don Ciccio e Fili. And I shadowed him at a liquor store tasting and went to the DuPont Circle Farmers Market. And just that learning curve with every person that walks up, you know, what is it? And then you say bitter and they walk away or mm-hmm. they try his limoncello, his liqueurs, his aperitivo, his Amaros. It's just a hurdle. So when I was writing the book, I was questioned a lot with this craft distilling boom in America, where's our domestic Amaro? That question's been answered now. We're seeing more and more of it. But the biggest thing was learning curve of, it's not going to make any money with people like a bourbon or a gin or a vodka. it lasts a while. We're not Italian. They have quite a head start on us in mm-hmm. terms of their palate and how to make it, and years of studying infusions and macerations, decades of it. But so I got into it. It seemed a natural progression from my first book, Bitters, which was about cocktail bitters, non-potable bitters like Angostura. They're more flavoring agents, not meant to be consumed on their own, but used in dashes or drops as a flavoring agent. When I wrote the book, I wrote it in like 2008, 2009, I think. No, yeah, 2009, I wrote most of it. Amaro was around. Like, I was drinking Fernet Branca. I knew what Campari was. I was dipping into Averna and Zucca and Ramazzotti and some other ones. I was living in Seattle at the time, which had a great cocktail scene. So I had access to a lot of these and was learning about them. And some of the drinks in the book featured Amaro, but it would have been too big a book to tackle both topics. Mm-hmm. And when I finished Bitters, before it came out, my agent at the time said, "So what's next?" And I said, "Oh, I want to write a book on Amaro." And this was like 2011, early 2011. And he was like, "Please, you know, like, no one knows what Bitters is, let alone Amaro. Let's, you know,
don't go more obscure."
Yeah, pump the brakes. And Bitters was a bit of a success and kept me busy for a few years. But the whole time I went down that rabbit hole of learning as much as I could about Amaro. And when I finally came up for air, I'm like, "Wow, it's almost been, you know, 3 years now. I need to write another book." So there was a 5-year gap between the books. And a lot of that was because of just keeping busy with Bitters and educating about Bitters. But the word I use to unite the two books is demystify. So these were both topics that didn't have a lot of written material out there about them. Esoteric. Amaro especially, you're dealing with proprietary recipes for the most part, passed down generation to generation. No government oversight or regulation or rules on what makes an Amaro an Amaro. What makes an Alpine Amaro an Alpine Amaro? What makes a Fernet a Fernet? So I had to do a lot of, like, what genre writers would say, like, world building, where I had to say, like, you know, is Campari an Amaro? Is Italian say no, but I put it in that umbrella, but it's an aperitivo, which is bitter. So it was all about, for me, it was like bittersweet herbal liqueur meant fair game. So not just Italy. Like, I do talk about Germany and Underberg and other countries like Mère Picon in France, and, you know, Amaro being made in the States now. But it is sort of a love letter to Italy, the birthplace of it. But it's about the spirits intended as digestivos that are now but through my distinctly American point of view.
It's funny you bring it up. Actually, a guest asked me the other night, and this must have been based on something she read from you. Is Campari an Amaro or not? In my opinion,
you say no.
I said no. I said because the way it's used, it's mm-hmm. used as an aperitivo more often, and because of the beautiful red color, which is not traditionally associated mm-hmm. with Amaro. So maybe you can help me to get a better.
Well, no, it's true.
You're the expert on this.
Well, so. I was told every other Italian producer and bartender adamantly told me, no, it's not an Amaro, it's a bitter. But Amaro means bitter, so it's you're getting this kind of...
So you lay out, and the first time that I ever saw this, the idea of a potable bitter versus non-potable bitter, and the non-potable bitter, meaning they're the bittering agents used in cocktails, potable bitters that you're drinking in its own, right?
Yeah, it's non-potable is not to be consumed, and potable is to be consumed. A big difference between like Angostura, it's higher proof. It's like going to be 45% around that. It isn't watered down. It isn't sweetened. The Amaro producers make Amaro palatable by adding water.
But
and
then,
sugar
how do you define the difference between the aperitivo that's based on a bitter like Amaro, or even Aperol is bittering agents in Chinar, mm-hmm. right? Versus the digestivo or the Amaro that is also based on it's bitter,
yes.
sweet. And
so I would say, like in the book, I talk about my sort of, I hate to use the word rules, but essentially I couldn't write a book called Amaro without talking about Campari. Cause you know, Campari is one of the most famous bitter liqueurs out there. You were absolutely right that Campari and a lot of its, you know, red hued cousins like Cappelletti and Aperol, orange-hued, are aperitivos. They're consumed before dinner, before a meal, to open the appetite, while an amaro traditionally is to aid digestion. The reality is a lot of those are using the same bittering agents, as you said, like gentian or mm-hmm. or cinchona bark or quassia. All sorts of things like that come into play. But so amaro is about the act of when you drink it too, which is the end of the meal. But if we just put that firm rule in there and said, okay, all the red ones are only at dinner or before dinner. I think the thing about the Campari and its kin too is they're traditionally not consumed on their own. Usually soda is added or another spirit like vermouth. Soda water, Prosecco or sparkling wine. They're used in cocktails, but they're rarely consumed on their own. So to mention Francesco again, he in his very romantic Amalfi Coast way said, you know, let the color of the bottle cue you as to when to drink it. You know, bright in the evening, red in the evening, at sunset, darker at night. That being said, though, you mentioned Chinar. Chinar is very low ABV. It's like 16.5%. That's considered an aperitivo. I mean, but it's also perfectly fine at the end of dinner neat. Amaro Nonino, another one of my favorites. A little hotter, I think that's 36% ABV, mm-hmm. but sweet, has a tamarind orange kind of taste to it. Perfectly fine with a little ice cube and an orange peel before dinner or after. So some of these lighter ones, I think, are versatile and can travel. So a long-winded answer, but I think I call a Campari an aperitivo bitter, but I put it under the umbrella of Amaro because I like when I talk about Amaro and do classes or talks, that's where we start. Like that's go from there, then to light, then to medium, then different styles of bitters.
And I should say, you know, even as I answered her that, I thought about how the cocktail I would prefer before a meal versus the one after a meal.
Yeah.
And the Negroni isn't my before a meal drink always.
Absolutely not.
It's strong.
It's too spiritous. Yeah. It's I mean, I've had plenty before dinner.
Me too.
And Boulevardiers too. But yeah, traditionally a Campari in soda or an Americano.
Or Spagliato.
Spagliato, one of my favorites. Yeah, is much more technically appropriate there. So yeah, I mean I think if you call it an aperitivo, but I think there is that confusion of, you know, they call them bitter using English spelling versus Amaro. So that is just this chicken and egg thing. We can go around and around trying to define it of what makes it that. So I guess technically Amaro means after dinner, a liqueur, bittersweet herbal liqueur consumed after dinner, the act of when you drink it. But there are a lot of loopholes and asterisks and things like that to consider. So technically I would say Campari is an aperitivo bitter, but I would still have it in the conversation when talking about Amaro.
Interesting.
Does that work?
That works. Yeah. And even though it took us a while to get there, that's still much more concise than when people ask me what an Amaro is. And I usually say it's a bitter herbal after dinner drink that's based on a proprietary blend of different herbs, barks, spices, flowers, fruit peels.
And then your guests are running out the door.
And they're just like glazing over.
I think the key is bittersweet. You have to mention that sweetness. Not all are. There's relatively few painfully bitter Amari. You know, mm-hmm. most are bittersweet. That balance. Some lean different ways on the spectrum for more earthy or vegetal or piney. But yeah, I pretty much say, you know, Italian bittersweet herbal liqueur used as a digestivo at the end of dinner.
What are the major categories of Amaro? You mentioned some of them, like Rhabarbaro, Fernet, and I've read about some categories, but in practice, I feel like I don't know. No. What are some of the categories that are the most prominent?
I adopt it when I talk about it and help frame it for people, I do a lot of talks in classes and training for restaurant staffs or bars or for the public where we'll do anywhere from an 8 to 12 Amari tasting. And we could do one of like all light Amaro or all medium, all aperitivo. But essentially, I don't break it out a lot by alcohol content, but by style, more of like what the producer intended or what I imagine they intended. So I start with taking the aperitivos off the table, like Campari. I start with light. So that's generally something that's not, it's dipping your toes in the water of it. Amaro Montenegro is a great example, and Amaro Maletti. Mm-hmm. Both are very approachable. Not too bitter, not too sweet. They lean more on the sweet side. Even Amaro Nonino I put in there. And then I would move to medium, which is your classic gateway Amaros, like Averna, which has a nice orangey cola taste to it. Ramazzotti, which has like a root beer, almost herbal root beer style. Amaro Lucano, well-balanced herbal with some licorice notes. These kind of Goldilocks Amaro, they're not too bitter, not too sweet. And these are also ones that work really great in cocktails, but also mm-hmm. can sub out for each other. So you can have an Amaro Sour made with Lucano or Averna. You'll get slightly different notes from each, but they both serve the purpose without taking it to a whole different place. Black Manhattan is traditionally made with Averna, but you can sub in Lucano. Then I would kind of bridge it over to, you mentioned Rhabarbaro, which is traditionally, it means an Amaro made with Chinese rhubarb root, so which is incredibly smoky, naturally smoky. But that ingredient is used in others, like Lucano uses it as well. But the Zucca for years was the only Amaro around available in the States that was that style. Until recently, Cappelletti started importing a couple of years ago this great Amaro Rhabarbaro Sfumato, which it's just highly smoky. It tastes like you're having a campfire. It's very mezcal-like. So I love that we're seeing more examples of that style. And then Garciofo, which is made with artichoke. So Chinar for years. Chinar is the artichoke's on the bottle. It's the only publicly listed ingredient for Chinar, but it really doesn't taste like artichoke. Mm-hmm. There's a vegetal quality, earthy quality. And Don Chichu Ifili introduced his C3 version, which is his take on that style. And there's one in California from Falcon Spirits. That is out now too. So we're seeing some of domestic styles. And then you have Alpine, which is Braulio for years was the leading example of that style, that classic après-ski, Northern Italy mountain style where it's piney, it's woodsy, forest floor, bracing. And then Fernet, which, everyone knows Fernet Branca from the Branca family, but Branca is a surname. Fernet is the category. And that is traditionally higher in alcohol, black licorice in color. But then they usually share, again, no rules, but normally there's about half a dozen common ingredients like saffron, Allopherox, myrrh, a few others that you would find in a Fernet style. Then there's some what I call outliers or wild cards, like the Varnelli's family. Makes two of my favorites, the Sibilla and the Deliberista. And those are... of a specific region, they still use some local ingredients there, most notably their local raw honey, which they use as a sweetener in it. Those are hard to classify, and that's what I love about them, that they're so, each bottle is so unique, even within the category. So, last summer I did an all Fernet tasting. I think we did 13 bottles, or 13 different Fernets, and everyone was getting so, they're like, well, why is this a Fernet? Why is this a Fernet? And I would say, because it has these common ingredients, but most importantly, they're calling it a Fernet. So, mm-hmm. There's some Amaro that taste Fernet-like that aren't a Fernet. So, all that being said, those are not firm rules.
It's art if someone says it's art.
Exactly.
It's Fernet if they claim it's Fernet.
So, those are sort of the rough styles, and that's the progression I mm-hmm. would lead people through. But like I say, I've done tastings where we taste a lot of medium styles altogether, like those Maletti's and Montenegros and Noninos. But I always like to represent the different styles when doing a tasting and give people the spectrum of it, and it helps people determine what they might like or where their palate agrees.
Now, I know that Amaro producers are notoriously secretive about their ingredients. I think chefs used to be the same way, but they've sort of warmed and there's all sorts of sharing. Now, and everyone is the quickest to share. Like, we're using this mm-hmm. really special, amazing ingredient. Look at this. Have you started to see that with Amaro producers as well, that people are being a little bit more open with what they're using?
Yeah, I think one thing I didn't say at the very beginning was, in Italy, these grew from regionally driven expressions of the ingredients they had on hand. They were made by monks and friars and the religious sect using their locally grown herbs and botanicals and produce. The spice trade blew that up and made all sorts of ingredients available all around the world. And so that's why you have a northern style. So that being said, but the reality is they're getting ingredients from all around the world now in, you know, big bags with secret codes on them and numbers. I've seen them come into the factories and on the loading docks. You know, there aren't maidens up in the mountains picking things necessarily. There
except
are some
Varnelli, though, right?
Well, Varnelli, yeah. There, like, maybe, that yeah. being said, there are some, like Maletti is using local saffron. Cool. Varnelli is using local botanicals from the mountainside. Braulio is still sourcing some mountainside herbs. But the reality is they can get better deals getting it from other places. Like Fernet Branca, I don't think there's any ingredients from what, there might be one from Italy. All the rest are from around the world. So that's a big thing to consider now when you have, so there are styles like Southern, especially Averna and Del Capo. Those are Sicilian Amaro. They're bright, a lot of heavy with citrus because of the great citrus down there. There's sort of coastal styles where, but it's really about, like when I met Matteo Maletti, who's fourth or fifth generation now of the Maletti family, he gets romantic talking about it in terms of it brings you to the sense of the place where you drank it. So like I know like drinking certain ones at certain places in Italy will always call that back, and that can often be a little romantic and you're blurring it versus that's a northern style or that's from here or there. But there are still some regionally driven ones. So that being said, to go back to your original question, many producers are still very secretive. They'll list, you know, three ingredients plus many more, or they'll say up to 30 ingredients, including boom, boom, boom. Like I said, Chinar will only tell you there's artichoke. Averna only says lemon, orange, pomegranate. Braulio has four ingredients they'll talk about, and that's it publicly. So that can get very frustrating, and that can hinder further education on the topic, or whether educating your guests or your bartenders about it. But I found, you know, more and more with some brands are the younger generation are pulling the family more into the modern age through social media and websites, and like on the Amaro Lucano website, they have every ingredient listed, and even Montenegro is being a lot more transparent about it. They're sending bartenders like a box with all their botanicals to kind of this is all the real ingredients that go in here. I think people are confident enough to know no one could ever duplicate the formula of Fernet
Branca.
Yeah,
you need to really know all of the proportions exactly. and the lengths of maceration.
But
it's interesting you bring up the current generation too in Italy, because Amaro is sort of like what I've always known is like an older person's exactly. drink in Italy. And even I was at Amori Amargo with Chiara Pepe, who's the granddaughter of Emidio Pepe, a great winemaker in Abruzzo. Okay. And they're in a town called Torano Nuovo, which is a 20-minute drive from Ascoli Piceno, which is mm-hmm. where Maletti is yes. made. You're just talking about Maletti. And we were there, and she's like, Maletti Amaro? She's like, I've never even seen that. They're known for Anisette. She's like, I had no idea they even made Amaro. Yeah. I live 20 minutes away from where they do it.
Yeah.
And that shows that, you know, the younger generation doesn't even have an awareness of Amaro.
No, and Nino's that, with Grappa. Like, they're a Grappa house.
Are you seeing that's changing even in Italy?
I found, like, when I met, you know, Silvio Maletti, Matteo's father, and I met Benito Nonino, the father, and when I was out there of that family, and they don't talk about what they do. It's just, it's a job. They do it. They kind of shrugged their shoulders. They were curious why I was there, but it was the sons and daughters, who in their 30s and 40s and 20s in some cases, who were really excited I was there and wanting to show things off, yeah. And really proud of their, and they're building out. Like when I visited Maletti, for instance, one side note, a really fascinating story was, you know, pre-email, you know, they had the two traveling family members would go to different cities and leave letters for each other in like the hotels. And so it was a way to see their correspondence of like the herbs they bought in which city, but it was just his way of kind of like leaving these virtual or literal messages for each other. But they have all those letters now. They're building out little visitor centers because there isn't, like in Italy, there's the robust wine tourism, but there isn't that for Amaro. Mm-hmm. You know, I get asked, I've helped a few bartenders visit some places by calling in favors or introductions, but you really can't just hit the road and go visit 10 different Amaro producers.
Right.
And I'd like to remedy that, like partner with Katie Parler or something and go get a van and drive around Italy. But I think, they're genuine surprise.
I would love to drive around Italy with Katie Parla. Can you count me in on that?
Absolutely.
Like, we will eat well.
Rome was our last stop on like a 12-day excursion. And by the time we got there, we were like, no more Amaro. We just want pizza and beer and gelato. And she was our fixer in Rome. That's when I first met her. And we had a great day together with her. But yeah, so I think I found that, you know, they're more savvy on social media. Living here in New York, I get to see a lot of these. Like, they're in New York often, like several times a year. The Noninos travel the country, go to different cities, meet with bartenders and restaurant staffs. So they're out there making themselves accessible, and they're very curious why their products are selling faster now in America. And I think they understand now why, and they're embracing that, and they're dragging their parents along with them, whether they want to or not. But I think the more, not media savvy, but just being savvy from a marketing perspective, whether it's doing a bartender contest or coming to, you know, grand tastings of their distributor in New York and visiting the bars. Like, I have been a guide for many visiting Italians in New York, you know, bringing them around to like the East Village tour or the Brooklyn tour, and to show them the kind of places I like. And it's very funny that they always go to like the very big international, like employees only. I'm like, there's other bars, you know, let's go to, you know, Long Island Bar or Grand Army or something, to try to show them like my neighborhood. So when I can get them out to Brooklyn, I feel like I've accomplished something, because they pretty much stay in Manhattan. But it's been fun to.
It's good work you're doing.
Yeah.
To come to Brooklyn.
No, I try. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, a lot of these guys have been, I wouldn't say like family to me, but I definitely, the Maletti's and the Vena's of Lucano and the Noninos, especially people whose names on the bottles, just, I can't stress how much they opened their doors to me. That's and true. Have remained like I said, they were very skeptical of curious why I was there. I had bitters to prove I could write that I did write a book, but once it came out, now to have their, embracing it and respecting me, or as an unofficial ambassador for the category, means so much to me.
That's great. So we're in the middle of the winter shitstorm bomb 2010,
yes.
2018, whatever. It's so cold. My brain's frozen right now.
Yeah.
I just put on the list at Fausto.
I want to ask you about this. Yeah.
An Amaro Caldo, a hot Amaro. I'd never seen it anywhere except for I was on a... I'm good friends with a guy named Michael Wilson, who used to be the editor-in-chief of La Cucina Italiana magazine.
And I met him at Fausto.
You met him at Fausto?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a brilliant guy who knows more about Italian food and beverage than almost anyone I know. And he's just an incredible encyclopedia of that stuff. And we went with Mark Ladner, and he was writing a story about the wild boar hunt. And
okay.
We were following these wild boar hunters around all day. They wouldn't let me touch a gun, which is probably for the better. And, you know, it's cold and muddy and gross. And at the end of the day, we went into this cafe in Ponzano, and the old hunters were getting these like hot Amaro, essentially Amaro with like hot water out of the espresso machine and a citrus peel.
Because I saw you posted a little video of you making it.
Yes.
And then it doesn't come up from Google or anything. Like because I was like,
yeah,
I knew
I
what it
find,
was.
I was going to ask you, because I couldn't find any other,
no.
other than that one experience
no,
I had in
called,
Italy.
I knew what it meant, you know, hot Amaro. Yeah. But so is this, could you just put hot water in it? Or
that's
is it?
It's there, just
it's,
hot
so it's
water.
Just, but you use it from this, but having the espresso maker,
it makes
it's
it easy.
But yeah. You could just put a little, and is it equal parts, or are you just topping it
equal
off?
Equal parts, yeah.
No, I mean, I've had hot Amaro drinks, you know, with, but never just that 50-50, so to speak, of this water and Amaro. I know some are, you know, like there are some, like that's the thing too, we talk about service style Amaro. There is no, unifying factor. You can have it chilled, neat, with lemon peel, without lemon peel, and warm comes up. Some of the older generation I met liked it warm, especially in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to have one of those. I could use one of those right now.
Yeah,
actually.
We've been using Amaro Novace from Francoli.
Okay.
But it works with different, you know, it works with different ones. I haven't tried all of our Amaro yet to see if there's like a style that's better. But I think that like Alpine or medium style is the better.
I was gonna say like I like spiking hot chocolate with Braulio or an Alpine style. So I think an Alpine style or a little heavier one would lend itself with the hot water, I think you could have fun playing around.
I even
with that.
Had a Braulio milkshake when I was in Valtellina.
Oh wow,
which was really good and weird.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible.
When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small. From careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat-cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's Cost Be Damned Taste Is Everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit michters.com or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
Speaking of Braulio, I actually have a couple of old vintage Amari for us to taste, one of them being Braulio, but I kind of think we should try the Chinar first.
Let's do it.
Which, from my understanding, why don't you pour for us, the Chinar originally was marketed as a digestivo, and then they had a hard time really taking, it didn't really take off. There were a couple of other artichoke or carciofi digestivi at that time, and they had, since they changed it to being more of an aperitivo. Is that your understanding of this? Or?
I think a big thing with Chinar and Ramazzotti too really blew up, so to speak, with advertising and with cafe culture, like making it a part of the aperitivo, making it, so turning it into an aperitivo, having something you'd have with dinner or before dinner. But I like I said before, it's low. It's one of the more versatile Amari in terms of, I love Chinar and soda. Mm-hmm. I love a black Manhattan. Like it can stand up to being just barely on its own and with some bubbles to playing a keynote in cocktails. So this is from the 60s?
This is from the 60s. And to me, Chinar and soda with a squeeze of lemon. It's the one Amar I want.
Nice. Instead of a lemon peel, you like a little juice in
it? I like a little juice in it because it's a little sweeter.
I drink Lucano and tonic with a lime wedge a lot in the summer. It's good, yeah.
I was surprised as to how well this aged and how good this tastes.
I mean, a lot of times with vintage Amari, like bourbon and some other spirits are quote unquote lightning in the bottle where nothing's going to change once you cap it. A lot can happen with Amaro because of the sugar, because of the botanicals and the herbs and so many factors, storage, sunlight, loose cap, seals. Mm-hmm. So I've had tasted a lot of vintage Amari and some have been big misses and some are so amazing, but I find a lot of times they get this kind of port-like quality, mm-hmm. where the sugars really condense. I've tasted some Zucca that just tastes and smells like an old library, like this great kind of paper oldness to this. This has a nice sweet, on the nose, it's really sweet. And it gets kind of a little caramely.
Mm-hmm. It's complex. It's like really, it's a lot going on for
Amar. Yeah.
To me, it's amazing.
I can see why it barely has a drop left.
It's been pretty popular.
No, really nice.
It's amazing that they even exist. Like no one intentionally, I don't think, took a bottle of Chinar in the 60s and said, one day I'm going to open this up and it'll be really amazing.
Well, I saw John Bonnet, a Brooklyn, lives in your hood, wine writer, mentioned recently about vintage Amari, and he's just like, I hope people are putting away Nardini and Braulio now for the future. I think with vintage Amari, you know, a big thing I didn't write a lot about in the book because it can get a little dark, but the World War II had such a big effect on Italy, obviously. Mm-hmm. And a lot of producers, their factories were taken over for the war effort, whether it was munitions or whether it was other things. Some factories were destroyed from bombings. The Branca distillery showed me like a wall. The show's it was bombed twice. And a big thing too, a lot of which Alex was telling me, a lot of producers didn't renew their licenses after World War II. So a lot of things went out or disappeared. So pre-World War II vintage Amaro is really tough to mm-hmm. find. So you have a lot from the 60s and onward. I talked to Fulvio Piccinino, who lives in Torino, a vermouth expert, Amaro expert, and he was one of our first people we visited, and he took us to this old distillery way out in the countryside. So he started with like countryside Amaro making to big city Amaro making. And he was talking about how post-World War II, Italy, Italians could go out and enjoy themselves again and eat again. And that was a big reason Amaro spiked, that they were eating meat again. They were eating, you know, richer foods and celebrating. And so that kind of spike with post-World War II is interesting time for Amaro. But yeah, I think like a lot of people finding these things, like Alex and others, you know, it's going to be just like with you used to be able to go to the Goodwill and find these great vintage coupe glasses, and once bartenders start buying them all, and then the cocktail enthusiast, you can't find rare cocktail books just randomly anymore. Mm-hmm. So people are getting these through estate sales, through just a lot of it is coming from Italy, of course, but I've been always visit if you're home for holidays, check out your parents' liquor cabinets or your grandparents to find things. But yeah, some of the pros are finding them in great ways and bringing in like a whole lot of certain Chinars or certain Braulios.
Speaking of Braulio, we have a Braulio that is a vintage Braulio, but we don't know the date on it. I think 70s or 80s is my guess.
Yeah, I wish I knew. But Alex is a pro, takes a lot of years of practice of knowing because there's different tax stamps, there's label types that obviously label changes, the caps when barcodes came onto, and there's so many context clues that you can really go down that rabbit hole. Let me try it.
I think this is delicious.
Yeah, this is, it's got this like murky syrupiness, but then, yeah, you don't get that wash of brightness that you do with current, at least that's a Braulio. What do you like about it?
The Chinar is more complex. Like the Chinar is a...
Feels just very concentrated. Like it's like a, almost like a cold brew concentrate where you would then add some water to it to make it sing. Mm-hmm. I love it. I mean, nothing wrong with it.
It's very balanced. It feels kind of sweet at first and then it definitely finishes very dry.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It's like a little smokiness.
So after that heyday, was there a bunch of closures again? Because when I'm seeking out Amari, and I've tried to find a lot of them being producers that I know and I can have a reference. And one of the nice things I do is that, you know, it's fun to taste the vintage one versus the original one. But I'm also finding ones from the 60s and 70s of producers that either they don't exist anymore or they're not imported and I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, well, there's so many brands just available in Italy still that aren't in the States and may never come to the States. When I was in Torino, this distillery I visited, Antica Qualia outside of Torino, they make things like, they do some runs of like 300 bottles a year. That's it. You know, so these are just going to the local restaurants, the local townspeople. And I brought some bottles back with me, but they may have, Fulvio is telling me some of these have ingredients that wouldn't make it in the States, you know, make it through, so to speak, without changing the formula, because they have to make parts of their formula known. There are still some regionally driven Amari that aren't here, like I think it's Padre de Pepe is the Amaro of Puglia or something, and I saw that like at the Bari airport and just scooped up a bottle. So, but yeah, Katie brought me to this one Roman, take a liquor store, just walls of Amaro. And I was just imagining every other bartender going nuts there with all the stuff. And people were looking at me like, why are you staring at all this Amari? Because it was the usual suspects, but then it was going a little deeper. And I found too, like in the States, in my travels, when you visit distilleries, they often have something only sold there. So I've seen that more, like Lucano. I got to visit their Pisticci Scala, but they have a Bottega company store in Matera, which is a very popular city that people visit. So they put it there because more people go there, but they sell Lucano Menta there, which is only there, and they sell a Grappa-based Amaro, which is only there. And you see like Menta versions of Ramazzotti and some other ones get there. So yeah, there's so much there. Like that's what I find too when people say, what should I get? I usually send people to Braulio Reserva, which I brought you a bottle.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So Reserva. So that is essentially it's a annual release that has the year on it that they make in a limited quantity. It's slightly higher proof It's less filtered, so the herbs are more pronounced. But the biggest thing too, it's aged in smaller barrels, so it's a little more intense. That's relatively easy to find at liquor stores. It's not
rare. In Italy, though.
In Italy.
Here, no.
No, in Italy only. Yeah. So that's my, like, what I call suitcase bottle, like Vitel. So I brought back three, I think, last time, and I gave you one as a welcome, or congratulations on Fausto. But I had a lot of people say, I will buy that, I will buy that. And then any, like, menta variations, just of the mint, like for Branca Menta is the only really well-known one or available one, and that's essentially lower ABV with peppermint oil and a little sweeter. And that came about Maria Callas, opera singer, doctored her Fernet Branca with mint and sugar, and the founder whoever's running the company then was shocked that she did that, but then they, as a tribute to her they made that. But there are some menta variations which sound like, oh, they're gonna taste like toothpaste, but they're kind of fun. So I like to find, I often will bring back things that just have a fun label, like, oh, it's got a deer on it, and I have no idea, and you can't find out anything about it. But my last trip, my record, I think I brought back 13 bottles across two checked bags, and I always claimed them, but I was in Italy last in October, and I only brought back 4 or 5 bottles because I didn't have the time to really, I was there for work, but I was with the gentleman who runs Campari Academy, the head bartender there, trains all the bartenders. We had lunch, and there was a little liquor store next door, spirit shop, and so I brought back a really cool arugula base Amaro, which was really tasty, and very dry Amaro from Asagio region.
Is Campari, now that they own Braulio, are they going to bring in the Reserva? I've tried to tell them, they don't listen to me, but no, maybe they'll listen to you that they should import the Reserva.
I was on a trip there with 33 bartenders from around the world, and I think every one of them bought bottles of Reserva at the store. I think it makes it special that you can only get it there.
That's cool.
And it's kind of nice, but yeah, I think we're seeing newer imports of, I mean, I'm not wild. How do you feel about Chinar 70? So they came out with Chinar, they doubled the proof to kind of appeal to bartenders and 50-50 shots and high spirit cocktails, but I truthfully don't drink it unless it's a shot or in a cocktail, but maybe I'd put it.
Other things that I prefer.
Yeah. And Zucca changed the formula. They went higher in ABV. And I think when they're messing around with the things that make them, like, we can still get regular Chinar, which I love. It's not like suddenly it's new Coke and you have to deal with it like the Zucca is. But I think coming up with newer expressions, I think we're going to see more maybe barrel-aged Amaro, you know, things that taking advantage of that. You know, I've seen a few things in my travels that have tipped me off to that, but that might be a way they're going. But yeah, to suddenly, and Lucano's an example too. They did an Anniversario edition a couple of years ago, I think for their 120th anniversary, and it's higher proof. It's very similar to Reserva in terms of higher proof, more herbal, more concentrated, and both are available, and that's available in the States too. So I like seeing that out there too. So it could be an option. I think it's still in the spirit of the family. It's not wildly different, but it's a different way to enjoy it.
All right, Brad, we're going to finish up. Just, I'd love to hear your thoughts, and then let's go eat a pizza at Roberto's real quick on this Bonomelli Amaro, an Alpine style from the 60s from Alex. Do you know this producer?
I don't know. Is it not
Bonomelli? It's Bonomelli.
Is it? I'm not getting a...
Yeah, Bonomelli.
The common denominator for these three is the concentrated sweetness, not in a saccharine way, but just this rich, porty kind of thing. With Alpine, you often will get forest floor, pine, a little more bitterness hitting you. I'm not getting a ton of that. Oh, I love the little devil's mask on the label there. Really delicious.
Really nice.
But
it's a little more cherry.
Yeah, it's like cherry caramel. I'm getting a lot of sweetness in a good way.
All right, Brad Thomas.
We're not going to go another hour?
We're not going to go another hour.
This is fun, Joe.
Well, this is so much fun. Your book, Amaro, is awesome. I can't wait to check out Distillery Cats. I'm sorry we didn't talk more
about it.
But there have been plenty of books on winery dogs. It's about time that
the cats get there, dude.
Maybe a brewery iguanas next or something like that.
They're dropping from trees in Florida. I saw they're freezing.
That's why I don't write books.
I've admired you since I've known about you. I know we met a few years ago officially, but I love everything you're doing to keep the spirit of the food and the wine, the category alive with Amaro. And so you can count on me and being a regular at Fausto.
Thank you. That feeling is mutual.
Oh, thanks, man.
All right. Cheers. Thanks so much for listening to this special edition of In the Drink. We'll see you back in a couple of months, let's say, once things settle down at Fausto. But please come visit me at Fausto. And if you don't have Amaro bitters or distillery cats, go out and buy them. All right. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.